NFL on Off the Ball with Subway. Be the QB of the NFL party and arrive with a 6 foot giant sub.
Football, 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 football. It's back. Tomorrow night, the first game of the new season takes place. There will be a kickoff. There will be a return. There will be action. There will be touchdowns. And of course, there will be injuries. On today's show, well, we've got a cracking second preview show for you. We're going to hear from OCU Manure. We're also going to hear from Cian Fahey. The bits with Cian were recorded before the massive Khalil Mack trade went down and before all of that stuff happened. So not that it would have any impact on this week's conversation, which is about the NFC. Although it might have had a bit of a difference when it came to talking about the Chicago Bears. We will get all of the extra reaction that you need on OTB AM in the coming days and weeks. And of course, on this very podcast, which is going to be coming at you every week on Wednesday. Cian Fahey has signed up for the entire duration of the season, and we will be bringing you some other big-name interviews right across the course of the season as well. A reminder, though, that our NFL preview is brought to you in association with Subway, official partner of the NFL London Games. Let's get straight into it this week. We're previewing the NFC. If you missed our AFC preview, you can go back and get that on all of our podcasts. Here is Cian Fahey, and remember, you can stay in touch with us on Twitter, at Off the Ball. Okay, we're talking about the NFC. We did our AFC preview last week. If you missed it, you can check it wherever you get your podcasts. Cian Fahey is still with us. Cian, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
So the NFC, this is where the sexy teams who play sexy football are all in. We're going to go east, west, north, south here as well. So the AFC East, if you need to know, is the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Giants, the Super Bowl champions, Philadelphia Eagles, and the team from Washington. So the Philadelphia Eagles were amazing.
Yeah.
Like, truly amazing. Now, there was that one little fluky bit against the Falcons where the interception should have been thrown but bounces back to the team.
Yeah, a couple of them, yeah.
Like, and that's a miracle play. That
happens.
It does happen, it does. And yet, you can't take anything away. And they've got a really young team.
Yeah, so they've got everyone locked in as well for a while. So they've got their foundation, which always sounds better at the time of doing it than it does eventually, because guys get hurt and guys get greedy and guys get worse just performance-wise. But they're set up so well with Doug Peterson. They have such a dominant offensive line that the offense is always going to be good, no matter, well, maybe not if they end up with their third and fourth string quarterback, but when you've got Foles and Carson Wentz there, assuming Carson Wentz comes back healthy, they're still going to be an effective and explosive offense, and they're probably the best team in the league until someone proves otherwise. And because the other thing is, they're probably one of the maybe the Chiefs, I don't know. I'm not sure about the Chiefs in terms of their defense, but they're probably the only team in the league where you can say definitively they're going to be at least above average on offense and at least above average in defense.
Yeah.
You can't say that about many teams in the NFL right now.
What about the Giants in the situation they find themselves in? Again, a change in coaching staff. They're doubling down on Eli for two seasons probably at this point. Their skill position group is not bad.
Yeah, compared to last year anyway. Last year was such a nightmare with all the injuries that Eli Manning was throwing to guys who just didn't belong in the NFL. Guys like Harry Wink or Harry Sharp was there, and it was like, no one knows who he is.
They lost their first three wide receivers in the same game.
Yeah.
I think in the space of two quarters or three quarters.
All to ankle injuries as well, which is weird. So that was Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, Sterling Shepard. Brandon Marshall is gone, he's in Seattle now. And Sterling Shepard is still there with Odell. And they also signed Cody Latimer, I believe, from the Broncos, who is an interesting option on the other side. But it's Evan Engram is the guy to watch in this offense, because he can do anything as a tight end. His only problem was he didn't drop every pass. He dropped like probably 20% of the passes thrown to him last year, which is a major problem. But now that Odell is back, now that Shepard is healthy, now that the offense is better run, they might not have to force the ball to him as much, and he might be better in that complementary role where he can get these matchups against linebackers for big plays. But I think we'd be kind of remiss if we didn't talk about the offensive line has changed. Nate Solder is there. They've added a Will Hernandez at left guard, who's a rookie, but Saquon Barkley is kind of who everyone's focused on.
Yeah.
You don't take running back second overall in the NFL anymore, and they did. You can criticize him for that. You can point out that it's a crazy thing to do. It's a short-term move, and he doesn't have the impact or whatever. But when you look at a guy like Todd Gurley and see what he did last year, it was a huge impact. Maybe he didn't have it the year before, but you can't always say one player controls all of that. But if you set them up properly, they can have a huge impact. And if you have Saquon Barkley, who is a phenomenal athlete, elusive, explosive, whatever, and you've Odell Beckham outside,
yeah,
defenses suddenly have a major concern here.
I think it's different, like, for all teams. Everybody always goes, what's the cost versus replacement? So, yeah, well, I can get any running back, plug him in, and he's going to get me 1,000 yards. And you're like, okay, fair enough, yeah, you can. Except in this circumstance, when you do have Odell Beckham, it's actually the sum of your parts, as opposed, so it's a force multiplier. Maybe.
Taking on from that, one of the reasons you can plug in an Alfred Morris or someone like that, the defense suddenly doesn't care as much about stopping the run. So they're happy with you, with your running back running for 4 and 5 yards, whereas Odell sort of gets maybe 3 catches for 40 yards instead of 7 catches for 220.
Yeah.
So it puts you in this position. Like, it's a very simple thing. Defenses have 11 players. And you, if you want to double-team Odell, or if you want to tip your coverage towards Odell and keep 2 safeties back, that means there's less guys in the box to stop the run.
Yeah.
That's a very simple thing. And if you have Saquon there, he's going to take advantage of that space. And if you focus on him a little bit, Odell's going to blow up from the top.
His first touch in the preseason game, and I understand it's preseason, but it was amazing.
It was like 63 yards or something, 36 yards.
It was just like the whole screen is moving for some reason, and it's like it's following him like a cartoon.
He did those jump cuts, and once you see a guy who can explode through those jump cuts like that, you know that there's something potentially special there.
Yeah. Dallas and Washington, is there anything worth talking about at the moment?
Dallas's revamped offense, man. They like Jason Witten and Dez Bryant, big names. Jason Witten completely handicapped that offense last year. He simply couldn't run. Dez Bryant dropped everything that came near him, couldn't beat press coverage, and that's going to completely alter how that offense functions, because now Dak is going to have a tight end who can get vertical, a tight end who can create separation, and he's presumably going to have wide receivers in Michael Gallup and Allen Hurns, who are better than Dez at getting open and catching the ball. Which, like, the interesting thing to me is Dak was someone I wanted to be benched for Romo during his rookie season. I acknowledge he played quite well, much better than anyone expected, but Romo was clearly the better player. But in his second season, he got much better. Like, the offense around him fell apart.
Okay.
So the numbers aren't there, but he got a lot better.
That's interesting. What about Washington? So you were talking last week about Andy Reid and how he was a genius at creating this space, but everybody was giving Alex Smith the credit for all of a sudden becoming a downfield passer. I think he was the third or fourth best downfield passer in the league last season. That's going to disappear if he doesn't have Andy Reid, right?
Maybe. This is the interesting thing. So Jay Gruden typically doesn't work the offense that Andy Reid works. But Jay Gruden is also willing to adapt. He's not like these other coaches who have very one offense. They run this offense and they plug other players into it. So, and I did notice he's played very little in the preseason to this point, but I did notice when he did play, Alex Smith was using play action. He was using a little bit more misdirection than he normally would. And they also have kind of the offensive linemen and the skill position players to run a different style of offense. So I wouldn't necessarily say this is going to be a disaster. The thing I just find with the Washington team is, where are you going? You've got Alex Smith, he's at the end of his career.
Yeah.
You have an offense that has talent, very talented offense. You have a defense that's okay. Like, what are you going to do this year besides landing somewhere between 6 and 10 or 9 and 7?
Yeah.
I don't see how you're going to be a playoff team. I don't see how you're going to be an awful team to get a high draft pick.
All right, let's leave the East and move west to Arizona, LA, San Francisco, and Seattle. Let's talk about Jimmy Garoppolo for the rest of the show.
He's the worst quarterback in the league.
This is... it's interesting that they're one of the most hyped teams, the 49ers,
yeah,
because of what happened at the end of last season with Garoppolo. But actually, listen to an interview Shanahan did recently. The thing that he was talking about wasn't the wins. It was the 5 games in a row they lost before they put Jimmy G in, where they lost by 3 points or less. So they were right there with,
yeah,
the worst quarterback and a very talent-lacking bunch who suddenly looked like they had talent when you plug them into a team that has a quarterback. This is exactly why quarterbacks matter. You go from losing 5 games in a row to a score to winning 5 or 6 games in a row to a score when you have somebody who's competent, who at that stage didn't even understand the offense.
Yeah, but they also won a game against the Bears where his biggest contribution was throwing an interception. So it is a little bit of a just tiny sample. So they had 2 games, I believe, that they lost in overtime. They had 3 more that they lost by a field goal. A couple of those were late as well. So you have Brian Hoyer as your starting quarterback and CJ Beathard. It's not hard to improve on Brian Hoyer and CJ Beathard. So if you want to talk about the improvement they made, that's fine. But the problem with Garoppolo is this kind of hype has gone to a point where it's the second coming of Tom Brady,
yeah,
even though he's thrown 220 passes in his career.
I think the most important thing for me is, and you talked about this last week, is people don't understand the importance of scheme. But scheme.
Jalen Ramsey said it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he might have been right, you know?
Like, yeah, but Jalen Ramsey said it's all schemes, but that's also because the 49ers tore the Jaguars defense apart last year with hard play fakes and they just didn't know how to react to it. Look, Garoppolo has the ability to be a good quarterback. The big concern I have with him is he does not have a great arm. and he tends to throw a little bit flat-footed when the pressure comes, and that's why he threw so many interceptions last year. And like, if he threw 600 passes last year, he would have finished the year with 17 interceptions based on his rate, which is would have been second in the league.
In Atlanta, when he arrived, when Shanahan was there under Dan Quinn, the first thing they did was shore up the offensive line. They paid big money for a center and a guard, I think, certainly center anyway at the start. They've done exactly the same with getting Richburg in this year. So I think that's the type of, it's proper building. It's not just we have our quarterback and we're doing nothing else here. And it's like, off you go, Jimmy. It's like, again, an organization that now, because it has a proper structure, is well run, and you begin to see the benefits of this. I think they could be a 9-win team this year.
You think they're going to win 15, 16?
I did. I did get drunk one night and backed them at 25-1 for the Super Bowl.
I don't like to talk about when I get drunk. It doesn't. Good things don't happen. I had the one thing you mentioned there with the offensive line. Kyle Shanahan is better, I think, at identifying offensive linemen and setting them up for success than anyone else in the NFL is at anything. So he did this in Atlanta, he did this in Washington, he's done it in San Francisco. Weston Rickburg is the guy they signed to be their center. Great athlete, phenomenal athlete. He'll get out in space. It'll be like when Alex Mack went to the Falcons and people realized, hey, Alex Mack is phenomenal. He's been phenomenal for his whole career, but he was in the Browns and they didn't know how to use him. He's going from Ben McAdoo's offense where he was never allowed an opportunity to get out and make key blocks. And he's going to be in this offense now, he's going to be a star.
Alex Mack also goes down injured in that Super Bowl that they end up coughing up the lead in, which probably is a slightly underplayed thing compared to the slightly dodgy play calling.
I feel like they still probably should have held that lead.
Probably. I mean, maybe they would have. The Rams are this also post-hype team after last season. Like, this is going to be one of those interesting rivalries in coaching. You hope that they both last a decade in their respective jobs, and given their respective ages, they could be there for who knows how long. But McVay and what he did with the Rams was astonishing in one season.
Similar to Shanahan, McVay is excellent at the small details. So one, like, just explain a very little thing that he does. He changes up when they snap the ball, and he changes up how they line up in their formation. So if when they get into the red zone, one of the things Goff did, I think he threw 4 or 5 touchdowns last year into the flat, where what they did was they stayed in the huddle for about 12, 13 seconds, and then they all ran up to their positions on the in the offense. The defense is trying to react. The defense needs time. It's not like Madden where you can have a preset play and everything's ready for you. The defense has to talk to each other and tell each other, you've got him, we're laying up here, we're doing this. They only get about 2 seconds to do that, and then the ball snapped, ball's gone, touchdown. So McVay, that's just a very little thing that McVay did, and he understands the little margins and how to win. And that he did that so much and did so many different things in that offense that it set them up for success, and that's going to sustain. What's interesting to me is Aaron Donald, maybe they pay him, maybe they don't, but Aaron Donald needs to be on the field for this defense to be anywhere close to its potential as a top 10, top 5 defense. And Marcus Peters, like, Aqib Talib is someone they acquired, old cornerback. That's the concern there. He's very old. He's a great athlete and he's been a very good player. He was good last year, so you're not that concerned. Marcus Peters, very big name. Marcus Peters is one of these guys, and I've kind of wrestled with this in the offseason. I love watching him play because he will mess with a quarterback's head. He will do certain things just to set them up later and try and get an interception off him. He will give up plays in certain ways. And he's just a freelancer who's freelancing in such a way that it's controlled and it's beautiful to watch. But he also doesn't tackle. And he's also going to give up some big plays but while he's doing their freelancing. So I feel like with Marcus Peters, this is a guy who I love watching play but isn't necessarily a great cornerback. It's kind of, I'm conflating the enjoyment of it with him being a great player. So I'm not sure how much of an impact those additions are going to have for the defense.
Yeah, okay. Well, it will be really interesting to see because they've spent big and, you know, they've obviously invested. They've had high-profile meetings in restaurants to try and convince players to come who've decided, yeah, I would like to live in LA. Thanks very much.
Must be tough.
They're like, people are making them close enough to favourites for the Super Bowl, and you can see that, you can make the case, you can understand exactly why that's happening.
Well, so, actually, now that you mention it, I said about the Eagles, they're one of the few teams that are above average on both sides of the ball. You could probably say that about the Rams.
Okay, everybody's writing off Arizona. I think they're stupid. I think David Johnson's going to have a big year.
Yep.
We'll wait and see. If by any chance they have a quarterback who stays fit from the get-go, then they're not a crap team. Seattle are also this weird situation at the moment where you have ex-players, you have absolute legends of the game who may or may not be at the club by the time we broadcast this, complaining about the coaching, and yet at the same time it's a coach who has been phenomenally successful at what he's done.
Well, this is the downside of the golden years that they had. So the beauty of the Seahawks and how they won their Super Bowl and how they went to another Super Bowl was they hit on all these draft picks at the same time. So they had all these guys who were the same age, who grew together in the league and who became all pro players at the same time. And now the other side of that is all these guys got old at the same time.
Yeah.
So Richard Sherman is gone, Cam Chancellor is gone, Earl Thomas is expected to be gone. Obviously, Brandon Browner is long gone. Byron Maxwell is back in a limited capacity. And Cliff Avril is a guy whose neck basically snapped in half. So he
Bennett's gone.
Bennett's got traded away. And that defense is about to be really slow and about to be very ineffective. I think you saw it last year when the Rams just blew them out in their own stadium. That never happened to that other defense beforehand. So they're going to have to rebuild. And a lot of it's going to hinge on Russell Wilson. And if he can, like, I know he had bigger numbers last year, but he's been a worse quarterback the further he's gone into his career. He needs to kind of recover and be better as a passer because he missed too many big plays last year. But like, he's got the talent and he's one of these guys you hope can be that good, because when he is good, the league is just simply better to watch.
Yeah. Let's move on to the North. So this is Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. This is actually really interesting. There's something interesting about all of them. And if you're a fan of any of these teams, you can legitimately have hope heading into the season. I think particularly if you're the Vikings, because you believe you've got a reasonable quarterback, a brilliant receiving core, a defense that's excellent, and a superstar kid coming back in as your running back. So happy days, right?
Yeah, it is. I'm probably lower on Cousins than most, but like, you can understand where they made the move. He's a veteran. And
Shanahan thinks he's a genius. Like, was heartbroken when he had to sign Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, but the best coaches aren't necessarily the best evaluators all the time. You see that over the years. But no, look, the defense there is more interesting to me than the offense, because you know the offense is great. You know wide receivers are dominant and they're going to be a certain level. The only concern is the offensive line is a bit of a disaster. Maybe they can overcome that, maybe they can't. But the defense, they added Sheldon Richardson. Like, they have Daniel Hunter on that line, who is basically the predator coming off the edge. He does whatever he wants. You've got Everson Griffin, who was probably defensive player of the year last year. And now you add Sheldon Richardson, who's one of the most talented players in the league. Like, maybe he hasn't worked out in different places because he's had character issues and stuff like that. He was driving down the highway drunk or something with a gun in his hand, which is a bit kind of crazy. Not something you see in the N4, but it's something that happens in America sometimes.
It is. It's happened a lot in America.
Or maybe you do see it in the N4, I don't know. But he
just that one time.
Oh, Jar was drunk again. But he has this ability to play on the inside or play on the outside. And you've also got that with Hunter, and you've also got that with Griffin. So Mike Zimmer is just going to be messing with quarterbacks this year. He's going to be moving guys all around. He's got linebackers who can play at different levels of the field. Anthony Barr is expected to be more of a pass rusher this year. So they might have a defensive line on third downs this year that has Daniel Hunter, Everson Griffin, Anthony Barr, and Sheldon Richardson. That might be three of the top 10 passes in the league, and a fourth is in the top 20. And most teams don't even have one of those guys.
Aaron Rodgers had a very angry offseason, and I think that if I was involved in a team coming up against him this year, I would be very worried. I have a feeling that this is like Aaron Rodgers looking at...
Opposed to normally when teams feel great about going up against him?
Well, I think it feels to me like he's playing for his legacy at the moment. Like, he wants to be considered one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time as opposed to just the best of a generation. And to do that, he needs to add a Super Bowl or bowl.
Yeah.
Like, he's sensational, right? And everybody knows that.
He is the best quarterback ever. But the way it's measured in America is based, again, like we said, on team success. And so he will need at least one more Super Bowl ring. He's probably not going to go down as that because the Packers have been poorly run. But the Packers have changed their management this year. Well, their GM, he's gone.
Everything has changed except the head coach.
Yeah, which is weird because
they have a new offensive coordinator as well, right?
I believe so. I'm not 100%
sure. Okay, I can check that, but yeah.
Catch me out now. But the one that interests me there is Jimmy Graham, because Jimmy Graham was derided in Seattle, but people didn't really recognize this. He wasn't being used properly. So they had Paul Richardson, they had Tyler Lockett, and they had Jimmy Graham. So they had three guys who specialized as vertical threats. They need to run down the field, they need to deep ball, they need to be stretching the defense. And Lockett and Richardson got to do it, and that meant Graham had to run these shorter routes, and he wasn't used properly.
Or block.
Yeah. Which he just can't do. He's a basketball player playing tight end. He's not a blocker, an NFL blocker anyway. And in this offense, I assume they're going to use him better than that. I'm hoping they do. McCarthy's still there, so we can't guarantee it. And if they do, if they match Jimmy Graham's ability to go downfield and win the ball in the air with Rodgers' ability to place the ball in perfect spots, that's going to be 12, 13, 14 touchdowns.
Okay, we've got to move on to the NFC South. So this is the Falcons, Carolina Panthers, the New Orleans Saints, and Tampa Bay. Again, there's just like, there is stuff to talk about for all of these teams. Like, you could do a full episode on most of them.
I think the Buccaneers, you can probably forget about at this point. They've been on a downward spiral over recent years.
Yeah, big questions about what's going to happen for them at quarterback now and into the future. But beyond that, Carolina look like they finally have begun to piece players together who can do complementary roles, as opposed to having a bunch of players who are exactly the same player or simulacrums of the same player. Atlanta have a championship winning quality team in their Super Bowl window, and the Saints from what looked like a desperate situation two seasons ago, suddenly look like they're going to be competitive on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, again, like you mentioned, I said at the time, the Eagles were the only team now I've gone onto my third one. The Saints are probably another team that is above average on offense, above average on defense. Everyone knows about Alvin Kamara. Everyone knows about Mark Ingram, and the offensive line is much better. And Drew Brees, obviously, no one needs to be told how good Drew Brees is with Michael Thomas. That's, and Ted Ginn taking the top off the defense. That's the offense. But defensively, Marshawn Lattimore is like, we talk about Jalen Ramsey as the best cornerback in the league. Marshawn Lattimore is probably the guy who's going to take that from him. And if he doesn't, he's going to be right there next to him. It feels like you're watching Darrelle Revis at times, which is the highest of compliments you can give to any cornerback, because he does everything. He's long, he's athletic, and he's able to control his movement and control his hips in such a way that very few players are. It's not something you can teach. And he is going to be a linchpin for that team, I think. Like, Max Williams, their safety, kind of got roasted throughout the offseason because of that Minnesota miracle. That was his fault. But he was also really good throughout his rookie season. Yeah. So you'd expect him to be better again this year, too.
Yeah, okay. What about Atlanta?
Hey, that's again, you talk about defenses growing together and developing together. They've got all the core for that. You've got a lot of young players there who are really good. They're going to keep moving forward. The question there is Steve Sarkisian and how much talent they have on offense.
Yeah, season two, you would hope that Sarkisian kind of understands, oh, I have a lot of complementary parts here. Maybe I should use them. Maybe Julio Jones should get more than a target every hour and a half.
And like, some in the red zone at times and
throwing the ball,
score touchdowns. But it'll also help him, hopefully, being further away from the Kyle Shanahan offense. That's a hard act to follow.
The last thing is what happens at Carolina, because it's time for Cam to be the version of Cam that was MVP caliber and to fully understand exactly what his responsibilities are. If he can do that, this team has the potential to be sensational.
Yeah, well, they need to get the best out of Christian McCaffrey, because he's a star who was kind of underused a little bit as a rookie. Not underused in the sense he didn't get enough touches, but the way he was used in the offense, he was kind of used as a decoy a lot of the time, which isn't right.
They've added CJ Anderson, so you just give him the ball and that opens up space for either Cam or McCaffrey.
McCaffrey is like Darren Sproles, can line up anywhere, and he can be the guy catching the pitches outside rather than running up the middle, which is what Mike Shula did with him. But the big change there is the wide receiving core now actually has some real speed in DJ Moore. When they let Ted Ginn go, Ted Ginn dropped a lot of passes, but he also opened up the offense with his speed.
Yeah,
they had Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess next to each other, who I compared to the Ents in Lord of the Rings, which is probably the most nerdy reference I have. But those guys can't move, and that required Cam to fit the ball into tight windows, and even when he did that, they weren't catching the ball. So he needs that to be opened up, and hopefully that will work. And I think it will work, because they do have enough talent there now. The only problem is the offensive line is awful again, and that's a big concern.
Who is going to be the NFC Championship game?
I like the Saints a lot. I think the Eagles, we don't really know what's going to happen with the quarterback there, but you would assume them. You could have the Vikings, you can have the Falcons. I could be talking to 10 of these teams. I wish they could put a few of them in the AFC.
Yeah, that's definitely the best part about it. Keegan, great stuff. Thanks for
having me. It won't be the 49ers, though.
Okay, so our NFL preview is brought to you this week in association with Subway, the official partner of the NFL London Games. This is our second show with Subway. If you missed last week's, then you would have got the AFC that Kian Fahey, we went through team by team, conference by conference, to see exactly what he thinks is going to happen in that one. Since then, some things have changed. That's the way that the preseason has happened. There's been a lot of big storylines and a lot of big contracts signed. So anyway, let's move on, because we've got OCU Manure standing by. This is an interview that we recorded with OC last week. He's got an amazing backstory that a lot of people don't know. They just obviously know him as the dude who presents on the BBC over the course of their season. But apart from that, he was also one of the most fearsome pass rushers of the day. All right, I'm absolutely delighted to say we've got two-time Super Bowl champ OC Umanure on the line. OC, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm delighted that football is back. It's been a long, long time since the Super Bowl.
I know. It seems like it's been forever, but we're all excited.
There was one thing I wanted to talk about straight off the bat here. It's the fact that you are a two-time Super Bowl champion, an All-Pro, Pro Bowl. Everybody in this part of the world actually knows you as a TV presenter and an analyst. I'm wondering, like, do you kind of have to remind people, hey, hang on a second, I was one of those guys and I was really good at that for a while.
I know. Actually, I prefer it this way. You know, when I retired from the NFL, I think a lot of players, you know, when they're still stuck in that environment, they keep getting reminded of who they were. And so coming out here, nobody really knows me as a former player. They just know me as a presenter. Kind of like a brand new identity for myself, man, and I'm really enjoying it.
What was that like? What was that transition like? Because we hear so many players actually lose themselves and they just find it difficult to recalibrate into civilian life.
Yeah, well, I loved it, honestly. I think because I immediately left America and I came straight out here to the UK, I think just a brand new chapter, a brand new environment, a brand new challenge for me. It was really exciting, and I've loved it so far.
The other thing that I really wanted to ask you about was your background, because this is obviously not the first time that you've made a move. You were born in London, moved to Nigeria, moved to Auburn, and ultimately it's an incredible story to reach the pinnacle of the sport the way you did. What's the cultural shock like for a 6 or 7 year old boy moving from London to Nigeria?
Well, that was interesting. You know, when I left England, I had a really strong Cockney accent. And imagine a little guy speaking with a Cockney accent in the heart of Nigeria. So they beat that right out of me immediately as soon as I got there. So it was strange, but I adjusted because my parents obviously were Nigerian, and they kind of raised me in a Nigerian way, if you know what that means. And everything was it was a little strange initially, but I adjusted really quick. I think that the bigger adjustment was when I moved from Nigeria to Auburn, Alabama. That was strange.
What was that like? Because it's such a specifically, in our mind anyway, a place associated with football. Was the intention to go there for football? Had you already kind of shown any athletic prowess at that stage, or why pick Auburn?
Well, my sister was actually going to school at Tuskegee University, which is maybe 15 minutes away from Auburn, and Auburn High School was the better high school, so they wanted me to attend school there. But, you know, everything was just strictly education. That was what my parents sent me to America for, was to get an education. It had nothing to do with football. And I noticed when I got there that the football players seemed to be having all the fun, seemed to have the cheerleaders, which I thought was interesting. And, you know, they just seemed to be the guys. And, you know, because I was new and, you know, I kind of wanted to make more friends and be associated with something, I decided to go out there and give it a try.
What sport were you playing when you were a kid in London and a kid in Nigeria?
Oh, soccer, straight soccer. I still play soccer now. As a matter of fact, I just finished playing right now. I had a little five-a-side game up here in Brixton that we play. So it was all soccer. Soccer was always my first love.
Are you the big man up front with a surprisingly good touch, or are you the shit-kicking center back?
Yeah, honestly, I'm a left back, believe it or not.
Right, okay.
I'm right-footed. I play left back. You know, I push forward a little bit. But I'm more of a defender and a passer of the ball than a striker.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I suspect that there aren't too many wingers trying to nutmeg you through the legs and kind of go.
You know what they do, and they get me quite a bit.
Well, they are very, very brave men, I've got to say that. So are you 15, 16 before you actually play high school football?
Yeah, that was my first time. Actually, as soon as I got to America, I think I was 15 at the time, I had never even heard of American football. So my first time playing football, I was 15 years old.
And are you automatically, so I think you start out as a nose tackle and move out to become a pass rusher, is that right?
Yeah, I was a nose guard in high school. I was pretty bad. Even my first year or so in college, I was a nose guard. I was a nose guard all the way through my junior year in college, and that's when I moved out to be a defensive end.
And is that the key moment in your sporting life where somebody goes, hang on a second, we've looked at your athletic profile and your skill set, and you know the game enough now? Because that releases you to be one of the most fearsome edge rushers of your generation.
Yeah, well, actually, it was my college coach, my defensive line coach by the name of Tracy Rocker. Now, he was an All-American defensive tackle at Auburn University. And before he made the switch to me, he was like, OC, I'm going to do you a favor right now. I'm going to make you a ton of money, and I'm going to put you at defensive end. I didn't know what he was talking about, but I was like, all right, cool. So he moved me at the defensive end, and he actually turned out to be correct.
Can you explain to us then, because like a lot of our viewers are kind of coming to the sport in recent seasons and trying to establish exactly like what the difference between a strong safety and the role that the cornerback plays. That's all still kind of, people are still working through the various linebackers, the Mike and the Will and all that kind of stuff. So what is the difference between the tackle position and the defensive end, and why did it end up being such a valuable position?
Well, the defensive tackle position, you're more of a run player. You know, you control the middle of the line. When the run comes through your gap, you have to stop it. You need to get penetration. But the defensive end is where you're going to generate most of your pressure from. I mean, you have some really good interior defensive linemen like Aaron Donald outstanding in there, and Ndamukong Suh outstanding in there. But most of the really good pass rushers are going to be coming off the outside, because that's where you want to put your speed and your athleticism at, especially the right defensive end position, which is the position that I played. Most quarterbacks are right-handed, so they're not going to be able to see you coming around the edge. And if you have a really good right defensive end, a lot of pressure is going to be coming off of there.
So you're coming up against the left tackles in
exactly
the blind side that the book and the movie made famous.
Yeah.
Tell us what it's like when you know you're about to get the quarterback. What is that sensation like?
it's really hard to describe. I think it's so difficult to get there. You know, sometimes, you know, there's 60 plays in a game. They're going to pass the ball nowadays 30, 35 times. And if you get one sack, you had a really good game. So I think you're getting around the edge and you see him. Most of the time, you're not going to get there. You see him releasing the ball. You try to get a little shot in there. But sometimes when you come around, you see him hold the ball for that split second. And inside your head, you're begging. You're like, please, please, please just hold the ball. Hold on to this ball for this one extra second. And then when he does and you get there, it's like scoring a goal. It's such a satisfying feeling.
I often kind of looking back at the career path that you had, you know, coming late to the sport. Initially, when I was kind of doing research for this, I thought it must have been a little bit disappointing not to have been recruited by Auburn, given that you're actually right there. But in retrospect, it was very unlikely, I suppose, given that you just started playing the sport at that point. So maybe you didn't have too much of a chip on your shoulder when you got to college.
Yeah, actually, I did. And I was just lucky to be there. Coming out of high school, I really wasn't a good football player. I just knew I was very athletic. You know, I had the skills, and that's what they recruited me for coming from Troy. So going to Auburn wasn't even a thought in my head at that particular time. So I didn't have a chip on my shoulder. I was just happy to be getting a free education.
We had Jason Bell on last week, and he was telling us about what it's like being an undrafted free agent and that kind of constant sense of pressure and having to prove yourself and challenge yourself on a day-to-day basis. And then I was just looking back on your situation, and obviously you end up going in the second round, but I hadn't realized that you didn't get an invite to the combine. Was that something that ended up giving you a bit of a chip on your shoulder at that stage?
I think so. I think my senior year in high school, we played some, even though I went to a small school, we played some really big schools, you know, Nebraska, Mississippi State, we played big schools and I played very well. Ended up coming second in the nation in sacks behind Terrell Suggs, who's still in the NFL, coincidentally. And, you know, I thought I was going to get an invite to the combine, but I didn't. You know, once I didn't get the invite, my agent at the time actually sent me home from the facility that I was training. So I had to train myself. I was timing myself in the 40. You know, bench pressing, doing all these drills by myself, recording myself. It was a grind. And so, you know, to have the opportunity to get drafted so high when nobody really gave me an opportunity was something that really put a chip on my shoulder.
That's really interesting that you do have that chip on your shoulder. Does that then spill into your play in your first season? Because you go in the second round, which is, again, this kind of crazy sense of, like, fulfillment, I suspect. In retrospect, did you feel like you were first-round talent? I don't know, like, trying to put that all together. What's that like now, looking back?
I didn't think I was a first-round talent. Actually, I didn't even think I was going to go in the second round. I was really expecting to go maybe in the fourth, fifth round. That's what my agent was telling me. So, you know, I was sitting at home watching the draft just like everybody else. You know, I was by myself because I didn't want anybody around me. I didn't think I was going to get the call till the next day. And I'm watching the draft, and I see the guy come up, and he starts struggling to say a name. And I was like, what's going on here? And all of a sudden, my phone starts ringing, and I pick it up, and it's the New York Giants. And, you know, it was a surreal experience, a surreal moment. I didn't think it's just hard to explain something. You know, you think you're going one day, and then all of a sudden you get the call, and your life has changed forever.
Is it John Mara? Is it Tom Coughlin who makes the call? Who calls you?
It was Jim Fassel, actually. He was the coach at the time. And he was the guy who made the call. And then after that, I talked to Ernie Accorsi. He was the general manager.
And that is a conversation that changes your life, because all of a sudden you're free to be this person who is going to be, as I said, one of the best attackers off the edge of his generation. And straight away, you make an impact straight away.
Yeah, you know, the first couple of games, you know, when I got there, it was tough. You know, you realize what an adjustment it is going from college to the NFL. The guys are so much bigger, faster, stronger. But then midway through, I really started to find my legs. And then all of a sudden, by the end of the season, I was playing pretty good football.
How are you able to do that? Like, is that somehow a sense of confidence, or like, where does that come from? Where does that understanding of the game come from even at that point?
I give a lot of the credit to Michael Strahan, the defensive end who was there. He's the guy who I saw working. Me and him had really similar backgrounds, really similar stories. He took me under his wing and started to teach me how to really be a professional, how to watch film. And it was through the film watching process, that's where I really became a man of my own. because you got to realize that at that level, everybody's athletic, everybody's big, everybody's strong. But when you sit there and you study film, you start to pick up tendencies in your opponent. And that was what I was able to do that really put me over the edge.
How much of your journey is actually something that you're remembering as you get there? Like, so it's very easy for anybody coming out of college who starts to make a bit of money, starts to get a bit of fame, to kind of think, well, look, I was destined for this anyway. And I, you know, and to forget the fact that you come from London and you come from Nigeria and you represent your family from London and from Nigeria and your family in Auburn. Like, how much of all of that forms who you end up being when you're there for the Giants?
Oh, definitely all of it, because it wasn't something that was expected of me. You know, my parents were really all about education. You know, my mom, my dad, they really don't watch football. Still, my dad, I think, saw me play one game my entire career. My mother wouldn't watch any games because she didn't like to see me getting beat up. So for me, it was just the whole experience coming from where I came from with my background and the fact that I was able to provide for my family and, you know, make a name for myself and my family when none of that was really expected was something that I carried all the way through. And I still carry with me today.
Yeah. And look, I think that's absolutely clear that you still carry it with you today. The response that you had last season to the Colin Kaepernick situation is still being watched on the internet as somebody who kind of was passionate and forceful and honest and truthful and who fully understood exactly what that story was about and was able to translate it in 4 minutes for everybody. I don't know if you've looked back on that since that night, because like there was so much emotion in the room when yourself and Jason and Mark Chapman were there just having that discussion.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I think the producers really just wanted us to express ourselves. And, you know, given the fact that I really love America so much, man, that the opportunity that country gave me is something I'll never forget. And, you know, I want that country to be as successful as it's been. And so everything just came out of me and came out of Jason. And it was a really good segment. And I'm really happy it went over well.
Yeah, and people are still talking about it. Was there any backlash? Because I know that sometimes, particularly when athletes take the opportunity that they have with their platform to make a stand, there's frequently stick to sports, stick to NFL, what do you know? But actually, I mean, this is obviously a story you know a lot about, so.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't really any backlash, I think, because we did it here in the UK. And I think people are just a lot more understanding here for some reason than they would have been if we would have done something like that in the United States. But regardless of where we did it, we stand exactly by what we said, and we'll continue to speak out if the occasion calls for it.
Yeah, and no doubt there will be. It's kind of unfortunate that it's clearly going to be part of the narrative heading into the rest of the year. Two quick final questions for you. Obviously, we're talking about the games in London and the explosion in popularity of the NFL in England, and obviously here in Ireland, that's why we're doing the show, has been something that has been, I totally understand it. The games are on at a perfect time on a Sunday evening. They're on all day. Fantasy has kind of taken over a lot of people's lives, and it's the perfect mix of violence, athleticism, and you can just exactly see why this fits in. What do you think is the future of the NFL in England in particular?
Well, hopefully we'll get a franchise out here. I think that's the ultimate goal. But we've been growing steadily over the past, you know, 10 years, or 15 years actually, before the game started to come out here. So I think the NFL UK and the NFL International as a whole has done a tremendous job. To me, the game of the NFL can't get any bigger in America. You know, it is what it is. It has sucked up all the air there. And it's such a magnificent sport that when you see it played, if you see a really good game being played anywhere you are, you're going to fall in love with it. So I think the future of it is to keep on expanding out here. Hopefully we'll get a team out here in the UK that can represent Ireland, represent, you know, Germany, represent England, represent everywhere. And that's what I think the future is going to be.
The last thing that I wanted to ask you about was you talked about, when we were asking you about the difference between rushing from the edge and trying to create pressure from the middle. You mentioned two players from the Rams, funnily enough, who obviously have loaded their team this year with their Super Bowl window. Are they your favorites at the moment?
Oh, definitely. Aaron Donald is one of the best players I've ever seen on the interior. You really don't see a guy getting pass rush up the middle of the field the way he does it. He does it from the nose guard, from the three technique, which is the defensive tackle. He's just a phenomenal player. Ndamukong Suh is a really good player, man. But my very best player off the edge, Von Miller. Oh, my goodness. Check that guy out whenever you get a chance. This guy is wreaking havoc coming off the edge. Khalil Mack is a good player, but in my opinion, he's nowhere in the class above Von Miller.
You were in school with DeMarcus Ware, is that right, in high school?
Yes. Me, we went to high school and college together. Rode the same bus in high school. I've known DeMarcus since he was 12 years old.
I just watched the America's Game where he was talking about the year that obviously the Broncos won it. And I was thinking then when I read that you two were on the same high school team that there must have been a pretty decent pass rush on that team.
You know what? Oddly enough, in high school, he was a receiver.
All right.
He didn't play defensive end, and I was a D-tackle. But in college, my senior year, he was a sophomore, and we were both. He was the left end, I was the right end. And we were destroying offenses, man. I think I ended up with 16 sacks that year, and he ended up with 12. And then obviously he went on to be a first-round pick. So playing together, me and him really did some damage.
Yeah, I'm sure that must have been a fearsome sight for any quarterback. Obviously, it's been brilliant spending some time in your company. Thanks so much. You've been great.
Man, anytime, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, great stuff there from Osi. Hopefully we'll catch up with him before the season is out. So that's pretty much all we've got time for on this week's show. Our NFL preview has been brought to you in association with Subway, official partner of the NFL London Games. We're going to be giving away super competitions with the opportunity to win tickets to the London Games, the Titans Chargers in particular, if you stay tuned to all of our social channels over the course of the next month or so, and stay tuned to the radio show on News Talk in the evenings. Then we're going to be giving you and one of your mates the opportunity to head over to London to watch the Titans and Chargers. And a reminder, of course, our NFL preview is brought to you in association with Subway, official partner of the NFL London Games. Enjoy the actual games which are going to be played from tonight and this weekend. Good luck.
NFL on Off the Ball with Subway. Be the QB of the NFL party and arrive with a 6-foot giant sub.